coming up on today's Family.ie radio magazine.
Everybody wants a piece of you, or they want your wedding their way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've got all this potential friction and so on. And it's so important. You're working things out together. You're actually building the relationship together in this journey.
We'll help you prepare more for the wedding day and maybe even the day after as we think further about marriage by design. And when it comes to talking with your kids about the dangers of drug and alcohol abuse, are you a bit reluctant to start the conversation?
The fear, I know from my own experience around talking about it, is that if we talk about it, then we're given license to do that. And I think that's why sometimes I would be reluctant to talk about it.
And in our third segment today, surviving the first 5 years of marriage. Many have said that the first 5 years are the most difficult.
Even though people now do move in together and probably get disillusionment much earlier, and they get married already having experienced disillusionment, they still have this hope and dream that marriage is going to sort it. You know, when we get married, it'll be wonderful. And what's missing is you don't believe in marriage itself. You believe in the other person and you think they're wonderful and they're going to be everything for you. And when they let you down, you think, well, I married the wrong person.
That's all ahead on today's edition of Family.ie Radio Magazine. Welcome once again to today's edition of Family.ie. I'm Ronan Johnston. So, you've decided to finally tie the knot and get married. The days and money typically fly past you as the big day approaches. It won't be long now before you're making your vows. Are you ready?
I do.
And do you promise to honor, obey, cook for, clean up after, surrender your share of the blanket to, relinquish the tele remote control, do whatever your in-laws prefer, and never leave an empty loo roll in the toilet until death do you part?
He does.
Huh?
Okay, so maybe it won't be that bad. It might actually be worse. So far, among other things, we've looked at the importance of an in-depth pre-marriage course, having a solid foundation for your marriage, what research shows about living together or not before you're married, growing intimacy within marriage, and how to handle conflict. If you've missed any of the programmes so far in our four-part series called Marriage by Design, or you want to listen to them again, they're free to download or listen to online at family.ie. As a matter of fact, we heard from one young woman who said, "I feel I've learned so much about what to expect when I'm married. I'm starting to feel like I'm not so sure I want to get married anymore." And well, truth be told, that might not be such a bad thing. We do want people to have beautiful weddings. More than that, though, we want people to have beautiful marriages. Today, Stephen Cardy and Jer Shanahan welcome once again Alan and Diane Morris of RelationshipCentral.org. So, Alan, we talk a lot about the importance of honesty within marriage, but I think what we've heard so far is that we need to be honest about what we're thinking and feeling well before we're married.
The thing about it is that sometimes what we can do is we can get it bogged down, and the whole emphasis of getting married can be on the paraphernalia of the making sure the church is right, the dress is good, the whatever the man's wearing, all the people are there and everything else. Sometimes then we forget the core of what this is about two people making a commitment together, making a covenant with God, if they're getting married in a church. We need to think about this together. We need to actually discuss things together. It's great to go to a good course on pre-marriage courses, and there's great ones all around Ireland, more than just an hour or two with a minister or a priest or whatever. These are ones that are maybe are 5 or 6 episodes that you go along and you deal with the deeper issues that are important in developing your relationship together. And it's amazing, it's much easier to talk about these issues before you get married than after it. So let's start with a blank page and talk about anything that we might have issues with, and being able to develop that and work out together what way we're going to stand in these things together.
Well, Alan, it's also probably very likely that during the course of the journey towards the wedding day that you're going to come up against some of the issues in relation to your future relationships with your in-laws, you know, because everybody wants a piece of you, or they want to have it the way they want it. They want your wedding, which is the only time that you'll ever get married. It's your wedding. They want it their way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've got all this potential friction and so on. And it's so important. You're working things out together. you're actually building the relationship together in this journey. And it's important there's a lot of dialogue, like you've been describing, because you will find that, you know, there are things that maybe demands being placed by one or both sets of parents or both sets of siblings on the marriage day that might be unhelpful and cause tension in the relationship.
The thing is that they think they know best, and maybe they do know best. You know, your parents, they may do know, but they still have to let you make the decisions and stuff like that. And sometimes the parents find that hard.
Yes, I think the talking about the shifting of loyalties, because your loyalty shifts from your family of origin, your mum, dad and your siblings, to your spouse. I think that's very important, and that you talk about that, and that they become your number one ally. And that's your new nucleus beginning in your family. You're making your new family of beginnings. That can sometimes be a little bit tricky, because parents, they love you so much that they sometimes don't always get that. So that may be where boundaries are really needed. And it really is worth talking about that with one another and really helping each other with that if there are strong parental ties with one or other. I remember when we were first married, Alan was sick one day and I had to go to work, and I went to work and I said, you know, I bet you he's going to ring his mother and she's going to come over and I'm going to feel, you know, and I would have been really put out, you know. But when I got home, he said he hadn't, but he had thought about it. But the difference that that made to me, that he had chosen to not just go running home or to ring his mother, but that he had, yeah, that just the difference that made for me, it was an alliance actually with me.
Yeah, and like, strengths can turn into weaknesses within, like, you know, our parents can be really good and that's a strength. But if they bring it straight into the middle of their children's marriage and helping them and being too involved in their, then one wants to be dependent on the father or mother instead of the husband or wife, that really makes it difficult for the marriage if there's three in the marriage.
Of course, it only adds to the difficulty if the in-laws are paying for part of the wedding. There's loads more information at family.ie. You'll find podcasts of this series, along with many other radio archives and resources to help your family thrive. www.family.ie. We need to take a quick break right now, but coming up next, how to drug-proof your kids.
The program teaches us to have a little bit of a template in our mind that we're trying to convey to young people about how to solve problems. And it's something that I think many parents have developed through skills at work or in their own relationships. But we often don't take the time to coach our young people.
So keep it tuned right here for more on today's edition of Family.ie Radio Magazine. Welcome once again to our Family.ie radio magazine. When it comes to talking with your kids about the dangers of drug and alcohol abuse, are you a bit reluctant to start the conversation? If you're a bit fearful that starting the conversation could actually plant the idea in their mind to start experimenting, you're not alone. Here's what one mother had to say about our How to Drug-Proof Your Kids training course.
It's really good to, I suppose, to be able to communicate with our young people, and I think the program helps that. And also to be more open and to talk around drugs, because I think sometimes the fear, I know from my own experience around talking about it, is that if we talk about it, then we're given a license to do that. And I think that's why sometimes I would be reluctant to talk about it and to inform my daughter, because I actually have all the knowledge. But I'm reluctant to do that because I'm not so sure will that kind of encourage her to test it and to try it out or not. But I think now I'm going to risk it and go talk to her about it.
How to drug-proof your kids. We'll also hear more expert opinion from Dr. John Tumbrew on the benefits of healthy communication. If this is the first time you're hearing of our How to Drug-Proof Your Kids course, you can head over to family.ie to find out more. You can also hear the audio from our previous programmes, free to listen or download. And I'll tell you more about that later in the programme. For now, though, Stephen, let's begin with a quick look back at what we've learned so far.
Yeah, they've been looking at some of the issues that, you know, can help their children to succeed and for them to be successful as parents. So, you know, inevitably that has thrown up some issues. And as we've said, that communication is a critical issue for parents in the raising of their children and having a relationship where communication can happen. So we're going to address that in some detail. And Professor John Tumbrew is now going to tell us some of the major factors that go into making for good communication and why that's very important in the case of the teenager.
Session 4 deals with creating opportunities to communicate and participate. And it's really quite important because there's very good evidence that in families where young people perceive there to be opportunities to participate, that that is a protective factor that reduces the likelihood of drug use. Now, there's a couple of issues with these opportunities that parents can take action on. One of them is the issue of listening. How do we become somebody who young people will go to and really want to talk to? We believe that the first step that a parent can take is to develop the habit of being able to listen. Why is that important? It's an interesting question because we've got so much advice to give them that we often as parents are wondering whether we should be listening to young people because they seem to be still very much formulating their ideas, and often it is hard as a parent to not intervene and start to explain to them the way we see the world as the more mature in the relationship. Well, the thing about young people is that their brain is very much still developing. And the thing that we often neglect as parents is that process of trying to explain to us what's going on, it has a huge effect on them being able to develop the ability to reason through if they have to explain to someone else. And they get clarity in their own ideas by talking to us. So by being a good listener, somebody who can help the young person to find the time to formulate their ideas, what we're actually doing is we're helping them to develop the good reasoning abilities, but also healthy brain state by which they can then go into life and be a mature person who can make good choices. Another thing in the program that we very much emphasise is the idea of teaching problem-solving skills. So here's another way in which we as parents can really guide and coach our young people so that they can become very successful in being able to deal with other relationships they'll face later in their life. The program teaches us to have a little bit of a template in our mind that we're trying to convey to young people about how to solve problems. And it's something that I think many parents have developed through skills at work or in their own relationships. But we often don't take the time to coach our young people in breaking down a problem and realising that they can brainstorm various solutions. They can start by naming the problem and being clear about what it is, and then prioritising various actions that they can take. So the program will guide us in a method of problem solving that we can share with our children.
In that audio clip there, Professor John Tumbrew talks about 5 different ways of opening up communication. Could you talk about those in more detail?
Well, the first one was about creating opportunities for communication to take place. And, you know, it's a great privilege for us as parents to be raising children. And for them, they have a desire to speak with us about things that are important, as we talk about in the next episode. And there are sort of different domains, different places where communication, meaningful communication, can take place. Like, you'll be amazed at what you'll hear if you're listening when you're in the car. Like if you pick them up from school or, you know, if you pick them up from a sports match or whatever and they're talking away, they'll tell you stuff that if you sit down face to face and say, now, how did you get on, won't be said because, in a sense, the environment doesn't lend itself in the same way. So there are various places where we know work well for families and for parents to communicate with their kids, and parents can create that world. Like, for example, if it is in the car, you know, don't have the radio up loud playing so that you can't talk. Where, in fact, really, probably the best learning experience you might have is listening to your child about what's going on in their world, etc. So if it's the car or, you know, another place where they like to talk is at bedtime, you know, when they're going down to bed or whatever, you know, that's a great time to chatter and sort of say, well, how'd things go? And they're relaxed and the main agenda items of the day are off their agenda, etc. So that's a more open and fertile environment for conversations to take place. And also the other major area where there are opportunities for talk and communication to take place is around the meal table. And there's huge evidence, and recently published in, I think it was in Australia, was that there is huge evidence that where families eat together 4 days a week rather than 3 or less, that there is a significant buy-in to the family culture. So that if parents make time to sit around the table with their children and have a family meal in the evening, some families are different. Their family meal might be actually breakfast time because they might all be early birds. But if it happens to be that the evening time is the one that suits, and that often is the case when you get together and you sit around and you talk and you hear about how the day went, that is a great opportunity, Ger, for us to open up communication, for us to hear stuff that we wouldn't hear, to listen and to engage, if you like, in conversations, because those are fertile environments which are non-conflict oriented. You know, people enjoy sitting down together. They like to eating and talking and so on. You hear a lot. And so that's very powerful.
Yeah. That's nice, Stephen. Wait, what was that? I was just sending a text there. Is it time for a break? I'm just messing. We do need to take a quick break, but you'll find more information about our full How to Drug-Proof Your Kids course at family.ie. And find out how to facilitate a course in your area there as well. Again, that's www.family.ie. Coming up next, surviving the first 5 years of marriage.
But don't they say it's the first 40 years are the worst? Yes. And then you get the hang of it.
Yes.
I think it can be very tough because you're bringing two completely different cultures together. You might be from the same town, but you've grown up in your family and he's grown up in his. And the way you do things is very different. And there's always a clash, I think, and a time of working that out.
And it might take more than the first 5 years to do that.
Stay tuned for the final segment of today's edition of Family.ie Radio Magazine. Welcome once again to our Family.ie Radio Magazine. We turn now to another article. In the early days of marriage, parting is such sweet sorrow.
Oh, sweetheart, I'm afraid I have to head off to work.
Oh, me too, but I hate to leave you.
Me too. The thought of 8 long hours apart, it's almost more than I can bear.
Text me when you get there, so I know you're safe.
Okay, sugar plum,
you do the same.
Oh, I will, honey bunches.
I love you.
No, I love you. And text me when you're on your way home so I can have dinner ready.
And don't you worry about cleanup. I'll take care of all of that and massage your feet after, just like every night.
You're the best husband ever. I love you. Don't forget to text me.
I will, of course. Don't forget you to text me. And don't forget, I love you.
But fast forward a bit, and even if it's ever so slightly, things may change.
Morning.
Morning.
I'm off to work, so.
Yeah, well, good talking to you.
If either one of those scenarios we just heard sounds familiar, you'll want to stay tuned. Surviving the first 5 years of marriage. Many have said that the first 5 years are the most difficult. Not everyone would agree on that, of course, but I think what everyone who's been there or still is there would say is that the first 5 are some of the most foundational.
I felt this enormous pressure when we moved into a home together that I had to, and he's going to laugh at this, but I had this enormous pressure. I had to keep it spotless and clean. I was working, right?
Oh, I didn't know that was coming.
Yeah, I used to work 5 days a week, have a Sunday and one day off during the week. But I'd use, let's say if I was off on Wednesday, I would clean the house top to toe. Because I was the woman, that was my job. And that as an Irish, that's what I believed I should be doing. And I, at one point, I kind of broke down and just cried and I was just bashing. And I was like, I spend every day doing this and it's supposed to be my day off and I don't. And it just wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And once I got that off my chest, it just became a lot easier. But I had to, it was because I had these preconceptions of what I was supposed to be doing as a housewife, really, you know. But then I've had children and I never, you know, get to clean the house and it's a mess and I've given up.
I'm keeping quiet on this one.
We're glad to welcome a number of individuals. Together, we'll explore some of the most prominent issues that typically present themselves. In just a few moments, we'll hear from Isla Jeffers and Joy Cantwell-Moore of Equip Ministry Ireland, followed by Peter and Fiona Perham of the Nazareth Family Institute. To begin our discussion, here's our own Stephen Cardy.
I was reading the Accord report called Married Life, the First 7 Years, which was published recently, and they drew a number of conclusions. They were looking at the first 7 years of married life for contemporary couples in Ireland at the start of the 21st century. The vast majority of modern married couples understand marriage to be a lifelong commitment for those who make it. Secondly, marriage is a sufficiently rewarding experience such that 9 out of 10 would recommend it to others. Thirdly, the traditional family arrangements of children being raised by both their natural parents is the one preferred by almost all married couples. Fourthly, cohabitation is an increasingly common occurrence before marriage for couples and is seen as a stage leading to marriage rather than an alternative to marriage. And finally, the incidence of severe marital difficulties in the first 7 years of marriage is relatively rare amongst the couples that they surveyed. And they just conclude by saying, finally, there's an important message for the government and for Irish society in general, which is this, that healthy, happy marriages make for strong family life, and strong family life contributes to the economy and demand little in return from the taxpayer. In other words, family capital is, at its core, social capital upon which we build the future of our country. You know, those conclusions from Accord go to the heart of you know, some of the things that we want to talk about in this series is why are the first 5 years so important?
But don't they say it's the first 40 years are the worst?
Yes.
And then you get the hang of it.
Yes.
I think it can be very tough because you're bringing two completely different cultures together. You might be from the same town, but you've grown up in your family and he's grown up in his. And the way you do things is very different. And there's always a clash, I think, and a time of working that out, knocking the corners off each other, I suppose.
And it might take more than the first 5 years to do that.
Yes,
it definitely does.
Yeah, I'm kind of encouraged to know that most people have a great kind of view of marriage, that they feel it is very rewarding.
It's very positive.
It is, and I think that's very good to hear from in an Irish perspective, that people actually, because to be honest now, if you think back, I mean, I'm sure you've all had the same thing before you got married. If you think back when you told anyone you were getting married, what's the first thing people do here? It's the jokes about, oh, the ball and chain and all that.
And the stuff in your coffee.
That's right, all of that. You get an awful slag. And I think particularly my husband got an awful slagging.
Did he?
Oh, terrible slagging. Terrible. And none of it, I'd say 9 out of 10 comments were unhelpful comments. But it was meant in good fun. Do you know what I mean? It really was. But underneath that, I think there is a deep, deep respect of marriage, actually.
I think the whole falling in love thing is what people go for. Even though people now do move in together and probably get disillusionment much earlier, and they get married already having experienced disillusionment, they still have this hope and dream that marriage is going to sort it. You know, when we get married, it'll be wonderful. And what's missing is you don't believe in marriage itself. You believe in the other person and you think they're wonderful and they're going to be everything for you. And when they let you down, you think, well, I married the wrong person. Mm. But, you know, because we're human and sinful people, we're going to let each other down. Mm. So you believe in this marriage and you say, OK, we're going to live this marriage out here, down here in life together. And when things go wrong, we go back up to our vision. What did we promise each other? What was this promise we made each other? We believe in our marriage. So no matter what happens between us, we go back to this vision we have for our life. We have this vision for our life that we're going to work through whatever happens here and go back, and our marriage is going to last, you know. So it's a kind of a two-tier thing, that this is my calling in life, that no matter what happens, until death do we part, even if I have to kill him. that we believe in.
Yes, thank you for that.
Well, I suppose laughter is a sign of life. And don't forget that we'd love to hear from you as well. Our text comment line is 086-251-6886. And if you have any questions or comments at any time for which you need a reply, feel free to email us, radio@family.ie. Again, that's 086-251-6886 or radio@family.ie. All of the features and programs you've heard about today simply would not be possible without the generosity of our supporters. So a big thanks to you for helping us as we help strengthen individuals and families throughout Ireland. So until next time, on behalf of Stephen Carty and our entire team, I'm Ronan Johnston. Slán go fóill. Thank you for listening to family.ie.